foes, they're in business together. Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group, since years before, been raking in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link.
They say code war,
we say code pink.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link. They say code war,
we say code pink.
Code pink for freedom, code pink for peace. Was not Iraq, but Iran.
They feed you lies, don't want you to think.
They say code terror.
That was Emma's Revolution, and I'm Marcy Winograd. Welcome to Code Pink Radio in 2024, presented by WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and many other community radio stations such as KBOO in Portland. You can also hear us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Do check out our website at codepink.org, where you will find the latest on our campaigns and all of our radio episodes and podcasts. In Code Pink news, Code Pink thanks, applauds South Africa for filing a case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, or World Court it's called, charging Israel with genocide in Gaza. To show our support, we will be delivering petitions, charge Israel with genocide at the International Court of Justice, to dozens of UN missions, embassies, and consulates across the country, from New York City, home of the United Nations, to Washington, D.C., home to lots of embassies, and to consulates from Houston to Miami to Los Angeles to San Francisco. As peace advocates, we are asking other countries to join South Africa to file a declaration of intervention in support of South Africa's case against Israel at the World Court. If you'd like to read our petition, visit codepink.org, Israel on Trial. If you're interested in learning more about our visits to embassies and consulates, email me, Marcy, M-A-R-C-Y, at codepink.org. On Code Pink Radio today, we will spend much of the hour with an expert in international law, Professor John Quigley. Here we go.
It is my great pleasure to be here with John Quigley, a specialist in international law, Professor Emeritus at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University. Professor Quigley served as advocate and counsel to Bosnia in its genocide case in 1993 over ethnic cleansing, forced displacement, torture, and rape in Bosnia. The Bosnia case was brought under the Genocide Convention. That's the same treaty that the Republic of South Africa has accused Israel of violating in its genocide in Gaza. Welcome, Professor Quigley.
Thank you very much.
It's a great honor to have you with us because you are such a resource in this field, having served as an advocate in the genocide case in Bosnia. So I'm very interested in your thoughts about the South Africa filing. They are charging that Israel has committed genocidal acts in Gaza, killing over 21,000, wounding 55,000, displacing up to 2 million people. Do you think they have a strong case?
I do. I think genocide was actually committed on the 13th of October by the issuance of the evacuation order from the northern part of Gaza. That was issued, that evacuation order, under circumstances that made it obvious that people were going to die in substantial numbers. Even apart from any bombardment, which of course has resulted in substantial deaths. But under the Genocide Convention, genocide is defined as inflicting conditions on a population group that are calculated to result in the physical destruction of that group, either in whole or in part. And that's why I am saying that the evacuation order was in itself an act of genocide, because it was issued under circumstances where it was obvious that people would not survive. The World Health Organization immediately issued a statement saying that this evacuation order was a death sentence for persons who were in need of medical care in the northern part of Gaza.
Professor Quigley, I'm not sure if you're aware, but Code Pink is involved, as is World Beyond War and Roots Action and the People's Forum, in delivering petitions. We now have at Code Pink, I think, over 26,000 signatures on a petition urging countries, every country that's a member of the United Nations, as I understand, is also a member of the International Court of Justice, to follow South Africa's lead and submit a declaration of intervention in support of South Africa's case against Israel's genocide in Gaza. We will be delivering those petitions to up to 20 UN missions in New York City, consulates throughout the country, embassies in Washington, D.C., to encourage other countries, many of whom were named in the filing that South Africa submitted to the court, as having either called out genocide, recalled ambassadors, broken diplomatic relations, and so forth. So we are hopeful that others will come on board. What about you? Are you hopeful?
Yes, I think this will be very important, that there be a substantial number of states that file an intervention. It's a very simple process, actually. It just involves writing something down on a piece of paper and emailing it to the court. It's called a written statement, is the technical term that's used by the court for what is filed. It will be then posted on the website of the court as an official filing. It can be done by any state that is party to the Genocide Convention, which is nearly all states of the world. The statements can focus, however the state wants to focus. One could be on the factual situation, on the consequences of the Israeli action. It could also be on interpretation of the Genocide Convention. The technical basis for an intervention is that when a case is filed under a treaty like the Genocide Convention, there is a possibility that the court will be interpreting that convention and what it means. That is why when a case like this is filed, the court's registrar sends a notification to every state that is party to the convention. So every state that is party to the Genocide Convention will receive a notice probably within a week or two saying, if you haven't heard, a case has been filed under the Genocide Convention. If you have any reason to give us information about this in particular, because we may be construing the terms of the Genocide Convention, you are welcome to do so. So when states file, in part, it's a way simply of showing solidarity, but they also can take the opportunity to express their views as to how the court should interpret the Genocide Convention. And this could be very important with regard to what is referred to as the mental element in genocide, that is, for genocide to take place, there must be an intent to destroy a population, either in whole or in part. And in the past, the court has taken what is, in my view, a too restrictive view of what that means. That is, it has said that this intent element requires that the state wants to bring about the destruction of a people. In my view, the proper interpretation of the mental element is that it is satisfied if a state acts in such a way that it is obvious that what it is doing will result in destruction, so that one would not need to prove that Israel wants to destroy the people. It's enough if Israel is taking action that is obviously going to have that result. So I think that is one important issue that states could focus on. And there are precedents from prior genocide cases that can be cited in that regard, in particular, actually, from the International Criminal Court, which also deals with genocide. Then there is also an issue of what it means to destroy a population in part. Does that have to mean, 95% of the population? This is left unclear in the Genocide Convention itself. To my view, it does not require a very substantial impact on the target population. In fact, the Genocide Convention, if you read it, does not require killing anybody. I'll say that again because I don't think people understand that. The Genocide Convention is triggered by acts that do not necessarily result in killing of anyone. That is, if you take acts that are calculated to bring about the destruction of a population in part, with the intention of destroying, that is sufficient. That's why I say that genocide was committed on the 13th of October, regardless of any deaths that might have occurred at that point in time.
Professor Quigley, for those who just tuned in, you are an expert, an international law expert, a professor emeritus in international law. You served as an advocate in the genocide case regarding Bosnia and the torture and rape that occurred there at the hands of the former Yugoslavia. Professor Quigley, you mentioned the Genocide Convention and the various interpretations, and I'd like to, I actually could argue, I'm not a lawyer, but I would argue that genocide was occurring before October 7th with Israel's denial of water, food, medicine, and fuel to the 2.3 million people in Gaza, over 40% of whom are children or were children and are children, and that this was in large part denying the basic necessities needed for life. I don't know that anyone made that case, but I would just say, it's a part of the historical record that this violence, this genocidal violence, did not start on October 7th or in retaliation for Hamas's attacks in Israel on October 7th. That being said, if you will allow me, I'd like to read a little bit of the South Africa filing for our listeners who may not have seen it. It's a little long, but I think it's important to share what South Africa states in its filing with the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, also known as the World Court. It reads, in preparing this application, South Africa has paid close attention to the provisions of the Genocide Convention, to its interpretation, and to its application in the years following its entry into force in 1951. as well as to the jurisprudence of this court and that of other international courts and tribunals, including the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and the International Criminal Court. South Africa is highly cognizant of the fact that acts of genocide are distinct from other violations of international law sanctioned or perpetrated by the Israeli government and military in Gaza, including intentionally directed attacks against the civilian population, civilian objects, and buildings dedicated to religion, education, art, science, historic monuments, hospitals, and places where the sick and wounded are collected, torture, the starvation of civilians as a method of warfare, and other war crimes against humanity, though there is often a close connection between all such acts. South Africa is also aware, I am reading the filing now, that acts of genocide inevitably form part of a continuum. As Raphael Lemkin, who coined the term genocide himself, recognized, for this reason, it is important to place the acts of genocide in the broader context of Israel's conduct towards Palestinians during its 75-year-long apartheid, its 56-year-long belligerent occupation of Palestinian territory, and its 16-year-long blockade of Gaza, including the serious and ongoing violations of international law associated therewith, including grave breaches of the Fourth Geneva Convention, III, and other war crimes. However, when referring in this application to acts and omissions by Israel which are capable of amounting to other violations of international law, South Africa's case is that those acts and omissions are genocidal in character, as they are committed with the requisite specific intent to destroy Palestinians in Gaza as part of the broader Palestinian national, racial, and ethnic group. So my understanding is that South Africa is arguing there is a historical context. This is part of a continuum. It didn't just start on October 7th or whatever day in October, and that it's important to understand the continuum and the context. Your thoughts?
Yes. No, I think that's correct. I think South Africa is thinking precisely along the same lines as you. It's just that what is being done now is so horrendous that it is easier to characterize as genocide, even though one can make a very plausible case that genocide was what was being committed previously. But yes, it is important to see what is being done now in the context of what Israel has done to the population of Gaza in the past. The very last few words that you quoted are those in which the Republic of South Africa says that one finds here the requisite specific intent. That's where I think states in interventions could usefully give some analysis. I actually dispute the term requisite specific intent. The Genocide Convention does not use the word specific. That's a term that is used in U.S. law that heightens the mental element to the point that one must desire to bring about a result. So to my mind, that's not an appropriate reading of the Genocide Convention. It is a reading that the court has given to the Genocide Convention in the past, and that's why South Africa is quoting it that way. But I think the court has been incorrect in the past in that regard, and that's why I think it can be important for states that intervene to focus less on what the court has said in the past about the mental element for genocide, and instead focus on what the Genocide Convention actually says. If one engages in conduct where one understands that conduct is going to bring about destruction, that is all that is required by the Genocide Convention. It may turn out that this won't be a significant point of contention for the court, but it may well be.
Professor Quigley, let's talk a little bit about, and I appreciate all of your knowledge, your resources, your interpretation, and your insights into how the court works, the International Court of Justice, the ICJ. Let's talk a little bit about the ICJ, how it is structured, you know, what the process is, who are these judges, what happens next? So a lot of questions.
Yeah, there are 15 judges, so it's a bench of 15 that will decide. And as I'm saying that, I'm realizing I need to amend a bit. If Israel chooses to come in and defend, it could ask that someone of its nomination be added to the court as what is called a judge ad hoc, a Latin term, A-D-H-O-C, meaning a judge just for this case. So it will be either 15 or 16 judges, but the 15 are chosen from all over the world. They are nominated by their own governments. So they're people nominated by governments, which is an important thing. It means that in order to be nominated, you have to be acceptable to a government. And if that brings in a bit of a conservative bias, it probably does. But then there's a procedure through the General Assembly of the United Nations for election of those persons who are nominated. There is an generally accepted a proposition that the states that are permanent members of the Security Council should have a judge on the court. That is, that someone nominated by each of those states would be on the court. And that has been observed up until this year, when a Russian judge was de-elected. So at the moment, there is no Russian judge on the court, which for purposes of the South Africa case, it is a development unfavorable to South Africa. Now, judges don't always decide on the basis of what their governments think, but that is a factor. It's a bit of a mixed bag if you want to ask the question, are these judges independent? To some extent, yes. To some extent, no.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the nuts and bolts also. So South Africa has filed this case against Israel, charging that Israel has committed acts of genocide in Gaza. I'm reading the filing. It's very powerful. As I mentioned earlier, Code Pink, World Beyond War, Roots Action, we're going to be at the offices of UN missions, consulates, embassies in D.C., missions in New York City, where the UN is based, and consulates across the country. I'm talking about Houston, San Francisco, Los Angeles. We hope to be in Atlanta. We're also going to be visiting consulates in Orlando, Florida, and Miami. So this is all happening in the next week or so. And those who want to know more about it, or who are interested in how these delegations are going to work, can certainly send me an email at Marcy, M-A-R-C-Y, at codepink.org. But let's get back. I'm with Professor John Quigley, international law expert to the International Court of Justice. Now, this every member of the United Nations is a party, right, to this court, which is separate from the International Criminal Court. Now, after South Africa has filed, Israel files, perhaps another country, who knows, might file in support of Israel. It's hard to imagine at this point, other than maybe the United States, which is raining, you know, sending all these weapons over to Israel to commit this genocide. We are hoping and urging other countries to follow South Africa's lead and also send in a written declaration in support of a case against Israel. Now, you mentioned there are 15 judges on the ICJ or World Court. So there will be arguments before these judges, and will these arguments be heard in front of the entire General Assembly? What role does the General Assembly and the Security Council, those five permanent members, the U.S. being one, what role will they play in determining whether Israel is guilty of committing acts of genocide in Gaza?
Well, the General Assembly and the Security Council do not have a role in how the court will decide the case. It's the 15 judges who will decide the case. However, once the court makes a ruling, even the provisional kind of ruling that it's likely to make within the next couple of weeks, that is considered legally binding on the parties. It's binding on South Africa. It's binding on Israel. And at that point, the Security Council could well get involved because the Security Council under the UN Charter is the enforcer for the International Court of Justice. So if Israel does not stop genocide immediately, there could be action in the Security Council.
Okay, so let's say the five permanent members, well, are there now just four permanent members? You mentioned Russia. What did you say about Russia? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, this is in the International Court of Justice.
Oh, I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, the United States, the UK, Russia, China, and France. Let's just say the International Court of Justice, ICJ, rules in South Africa's favor and says Israel has committed the crime of genocide in Gaza. The Security Council wants to reject this. Would it just take one member of the UN Security Council to say, no, we will not accept this, and that being the United States? Would it then go to the General Assembly to override the veto of the Security Council? Tell us about the process.
Yes, if there were to be a veto in the Security Council, the General Assembly could take it up make recommendations to states on the basis of the measures that are anticipated in the UN Charter to deal with threats to the peace. So the General Assembly could recommend that a military force go into Gaza and drive the Israeli army out. I mean, that's what was contemplated in the UN Charter, Article 42. That's what was done in the Korean War, but under recommendation of the General Assembly. So there is really very little limit to what the Security Council or the General Assembly could do if they are inclined by way of forcing Israel out of Gaza.
Now, what would it take to override a UN Security Council veto of a ruling against Israel? Would it take a majority of the General Assembly members? Would it take a two-thirds vote?
The General Assembly has a rule that on important, what they call important matters, the vote is two-thirds.
Two-thirds.
So it would be a two-thirds vote.
Okay. Tell me what your thoughts are, Professor Quigley. You're an international law expert. I'm thinking that there are limits to the legal route. They are important. Absolutely. They're one of the levers of power that we have to press to stop what we are witnessing, genocide in real time in Gaza, the bombing of hospitals, health clinics, refugee centers, United Nations schools, escape routes, denial of water, food, medicine, control of egress and ingress by Israel. This is all genocidal. I'm going to argue that. What I'm saying now is that part of this is the spotlight, the sunshine, the pressure that is brought to bear globally on Israel and the United States, which I argue is a co-belligerent in this genocide, the Biden administration, that the real crux of this is the international pressure brought to bear as a result of South Africa's filing. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that perspective. A ruling by the court is not going to automatically be observed by Israel. It has already called the filing a blood libel. The spokesperson of the Israeli government has used that term. So the government of Israel has already, in effect, rejected what might be done by the International Court of Justice. But it does put significant pressure to other states of the world. It makes it much more difficult for the United States to use its veto power, given what that means to United States standing, United States prestige around the world. I mean, the United States has already lost a great deal. There was a letter submitted by, I think it was 30 U.S. diplomats from various posts in third world countries, rather shortly after Israel launched its attack into Gaza, saying that the United States standing in those countries had already plummeted by virtue of the fact that the United States was supplying military and financial support to Israel for use in Gaza. So I think you're absolutely correct that the ultimate significance of this is that it puts more pressure on. If you go back, for example, to 1979 in Iran, when hostages were taken at the U.S. Embassy, the United States sued in the International Court of Justice. It sued not in the expectation that Iran would comply. It sued in the expectation that it would thereby mobilize world community in support of release of those people from the U.S. Embassy. So that is the real significance of what is done in the International Court of Justice.
اهدى ما هو كل شي باين في المحنة الله بيشهد مين احنا رجالة ضمن طرطش لك بنضرب حرب الليلة ما بنغلب بدك جبال وعادي من هدلك مرحب فيك في ولاد القدس من دبر حالنا نحل اللغز رنيت على نفحة وكل بخش وقت شفنا وياما وكله بصف ولا مرة نخاف ولا مرة ونص بدك بركان بنفقع بوف نعمل لك حفلة تخش تنط نستقطب مال بس بدنا نقص ما هو كله عارف ما هو كله شايف ما هو كله خايف والدنيا ترص استجدع دايما ووعك بوحش انا ادرينالين فاقع بشباب ينضرب بالغاز احنا دعين مش زي نقلير رد بالك عم تعيشها بلاش سوي واعمل واجمع كاش ما الدنيا صعيبة وبدها سلم سيبك من روح وحضر لك جاي انا قرش انا قرش انا قرش انا سمكة وصحابي ملان في الجلمة نشنع نعمل غلبة تجينا يا خالي مناخد العتبة تخوف بالليل ندوي لك عتمة بس شوف تنساش انا زي النوس ليح فتك في بغز رجال تحفر انفق ترجع بشويل وملان اشلاء بلقين 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 بالقد عني انا فاتح دكان من شلسات والدم مسموح بس للسباع مكتوب على القرمق لو غاد احنا جن بنطلع ما بتشوفناش ودموع ما تسيل اذا في الشمس نحن الشجعان ان قد انا اوينه وبوم بخ وطني بيعم زينه وفي بس عب صوت وسوليد والشيل حط كله طرح بمكانه وان ان قد
انا اوينه. I'm Marcy Winograd. You are listening to Code Pink Radio, broadcast nationally on community radio stations, college radio stations, Pacifica. I am honored to be here with John Quigley, a specialist in international law and a professor emeritus of law at Ohio State University. Professor Quigley served as advocate and counsel to Bosnia in its genocide case in 1993 over ethnic cleansing, forced displacement, torture, and rape in Bosnia. So he knows what he is talking about. He's a resource not only for South Africa and other countries that might be filing as well, but for us, people who are losing sleep, who can't sleep at night, thinking about all of the horrors that Israel is perpetrating in Gaza, where 2.3 million people have been under assault for, months now. Professor Quigley, to push back further, you know, I have to raise these questions because they do come up and we want to know what to say in response. I was just talking to somebody who said, well, experts in genocide are split over this filing by South Africa because some believe that Israel has not committed genocide because it has not killed or created the conditions impossible for life for Palestinians who live in Israel, one-fifth of the population. What do you think?
That depends on how you identify the population. And I think with Gaza, the way the court will analyze is to focus on the population of Gaza. Of course, I mean there are people elsewhere in the world who are not immediately affected by what Israel is doing. But I mean the fact that you have Palestinians living elsewhere. It is really not relevant.
I agree. Professor Quigley, you were an advocate for the Bosnia case. Tell us about that. A lot of us may not be aware of what happened there with Bosnia and Yugoslavia. What was the case? What was the outcome?
This was a case that came about with the breakup of the state of Yugoslavia into... different elements. And in the part that is called Bosnia or Bosnia-Herzegovina, there was and still is a split population, the majority being what are called Bosniaks, and a minority of Serbs. And there were militia among the Serbs in Bosnia who were trying to drive out the Bosniaks in order that there would be a merger between Bosnia and Serbia with a reduced number of Bosniaks in that territorial arrangement. So it was an effort through the use of violence to pressure persons to depart from the area. We argued on behalf of the Bosnia government that amounted to genocide. The court did issue a preliminary order, the kind that Republic of South Africa is seeking now, saying that genocide should be avoided while the case was pending. Ultimately, the court gave a rather restrictive interpretation of the Genocide Convention and said that what was occurring in 1993, what I just described, did not amount to genocide, but that actions that occurred a couple of years later in 1995 did amount to genocide. And in particular, it was an episode of of the killing of approximately 8,000 Bosnian men by the Serb militia at a town called Srebrenica in Bosnia. The court said that that amounted to genocide. So that was the only factual aspect of what was going on in Bosnia that the court identified as being a genocide.
My understanding, Professor Quigley, is that the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, where the South Africa case was filed, does not have an enforcement arm. So in saying that, the court did rule that there were acts of genocide committed against Bosnians. What was the consequence, and what might be the consequence legally? We can talk about politically, and we have, but what might be the consequence legally for Israel if the ICJ rules in South Africa's favor?
Well, the enforcement arm for the court is the Security Council of the United Nations. So that's where it would be fought out. the Republic of South Africa can go to the Security Council and say, please enforce this judgment.
But then, you know, the United States says no, and I don't know, does it just take one veto? The General Assembly, let's say, two-thirds say we're going to override, we accept the ruling. What is the enforcement? I mean, there's no detention center. My understanding is there is a detention center at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, which is separate and apart from the ICJ.
Yes, I mean, there's no possibility from what's happening in the ICJ for actions against individual Israeli officials. It would be actions pressuring Israel as a state. But I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, that if the court says that genocide is being committed, and if it then goes to the Security Council, it becomes very awkward, to put it that way, for the United States to issue a veto. That's why you saw last week in the Security Council, the United States was bending over backwards to avoid having a resolution go before the body for a vote that it would then veto. Instead, it pressured other countries to water down the resolution before it was put up for a vote. So, I mean, the United States understands now that it loses all of it, its effort to combat China in the world loses by what it's doing in support of Israel. It's, you know, quest for hearts and minds around the world loses. So I think at some point one might see some significant action by the United States in respect to Israel to do more than just say, oh, please don't kill quite as many people each day as you're planning to kill. But that the United States would say, we're not going to help you anymore.
Thank you. Professor Quigley, getting back to the consequences, yes, there are political consequences. And as you mentioned, the United States has to, well, massage its position a little bit while still, look, the Biden administration is asking for another $14.5 billion for weapons to send to Israel for this genocide. Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, all of these military contractors are reaping profits off of the weapons that they are sending to further destroy Gaza. So it's really an abomination and an outrage. I will say this as a member of Code Pink, who's working on a campaign to encourage other countries to file in support of South Africa's case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. It's an abomination what our own government is doing. And if people who are listening are equally outraged, you can learn more about our campaign to urge other countries to file in support of South Africa. Email me, Marcy, M-A-R-C-Y, at codepink.org. It may be for you, it may not be for you, but you can learn about it and see what you think. Now, getting back, Professor Quigley, to the consequences, and perhaps you can elaborate a little or elucidate the differences between the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court. The consequences, what were the consequences for Bosnia, for Serbia, for Yugoslavia?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, the court takes a very long time to make a decision. So it was only in the year 2007 that the court issued its judgment in the Bosnia case. Similarly here, the court is not likely to issue a judgment very quickly. It will probably take 2 years, maybe 3 years. The court will give South Africa probably 9 months to file its brief in the case. Then if Israel wants to defend, it would probably get another 9 months or so to file a brief. Then there would be oral arguments. So by the time there's a judgment, it's really quite irrelevant to what's going on the ground. That's why this preliminary stage is so important, because the court will issue a provisional ruling within a couple of weeks. And that is what can be used to put pressure on Israel. And that's why it's important, as Code Pink is saying, that other states file intervention statements in support of South Africa.
Thank you. And to follow up on that, I'm just going to read from the South African filing with the International Court of Justice against Israel. It mentions the following countries as having expressed outrage over Israeli genocide. It says Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia, Cuba, Iran, Turkey, and Venezuela have all described Israel's actions as a genocide, as has the Palestinian president. State officials and representatives from Bangladesh, Egypt, Honduras, Iraq, Jordan, Libya, Malaysia, Namibia, Pakistan, and Syria have also spoken of Israeli genocide. So those are some of the countries that Code Pink will be appealing to as we visit UN missions in New York City, embassies throughout Washington, D.C., and consulates throughout the country. Again, anyone wants to know more about that, they can email me, Marcy, M-A-R-C-Y, at codepink.org. Professor Quigley, we have you for just a few more minutes, and you are an expert in international law and the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court, and people get those confused, right? I think they're both located in The Hague, but they're different. Tell us how they are different, but maybe how this case before the International Court of Justice might influence the International Criminal Court.
Well, I mean, the International Criminal Court operates with a prosecutor who then actually files a case against individual people and conducts trials. So that person has a good deal of discretion. The more pressure that is built up saying that what is being done is unlawful by Israel, the more there's pressure on that prosecutor. Now, it's much easier in a way for the prosecutor at the International Criminal Court in that he can charge, and I say he, it's a male who is presently the prosecutor, he can charge for war crimes, he can charge for crimes against humanity, and he can charge for genocide. At the International Court of Justice, it is only genocide that can be considered, because there is a treaty on genocide that provides for jurisdiction in the court, if a state party is engaging in genocide. There is no similar treaty for war crimes. There is no similar treaty for crimes against humanity. So to that extent, the International Criminal Court can deal with conduct that would not rise to the level of genocide, but nonetheless is unlawful. And what the prosecutor would do would be to charge individual people. So he could charge the leadership element in Israel by name and issue a warrant for their arrest. The court does not conduct trials in absentia. So if those people declined to appear, and if no one arrested them and forced them to appear, the court would not actually conduct a trial. It would only be if the person is physically present in The Hague. But the fact that an indictment is issued means that all states that are party to the treaty establishing the International Criminal Court would have a legal obligation to arrest those people and surrender them to The Hague. So it would essentially mean that the officials who are named would have to be very careful in traveling outside Israel, because other states to which they travel would, many of them, would have a legal obligation to arrest them.
To conclude, it's safe to say that this case that South Africa has brought against Israel at the International Court of Justice for genocide in Gaza is of great political significance in encouraging other countries to express their outrage by filing as well, and maybe issuing sanctions, imposing sanctions on Israel. All of this is part of a, you know, political organizing and political pressure to stop the genocide in Gaza. So it's political more than anything, but it also might play a role in influencing the prosecution of specific people from Israel, generals, as you mentioned, at the International Criminal Court. Yes?
That's right.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Code Pink Radio. I'm Marcy Winograd, and we have been talking to Professor Emeritus John Quigley from Ohio State University, who served as advocate and counsel to Bosnia in its genocide case in 1993. It's been a real honor to spend this time with you, and I think we've all learned a lot, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group since years before, been raking in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link.
They say code war,
we say code pink.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link. They say code war,
we say code pink.
Code pink for freedom, code pink for peace, code pink to hunger.
When our enemy was not Iraq, but Iran.
They feed you lies, don't want you to think.
They say code terror,
we say code pink.
They feed you lies, don't want you to think.
They say code terror,
we say code pink.
Code pink for freedom, code pink for peace, code pink to hunger.
Yeah.
curtail our speech, our movement,